Michael Pettifish. I'm the current president of the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association, and I farm corn and soybeans in southeast Minnesota.
Mike, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has released its draft nitrogen fertilizer rule. I'm sure you and other association members have had a chance to look over this draft. Give me your initial thoughts. I know there's a lot to this. It's very complex, but overall, what do you want your members to know about this that haven't had a chance to look at it themselves?
I guess the takeaway is that this is pure politics. There's absolutely nothing in this that improves water quality. There's nothing in this that helps farmers, and this is purely optics. The governor wants to appear to be doing something on water quality, and so rather than actually try and understand the problem and come up with a solution, you know, this sounds good, looks good, and so it's a solution in search of a problem.
By that train of thought, then there isn't necessarily a problem. If this rule was implemented as drafted right now, how could it change farming practices for you and others in Minnesota that grow corn and soybeans?
Well, so if you're in the affected area, based on the maps, and, you know, those have been changing all the time, and, you know, I think, you know, you mentioned they released the rule, but this is like the fifth or seventh iteration of the rule, and it's really a, you know, throw everything at the wall and sees what sticks approach. But in its current form, you know, essentially people, land that falls in the affected area, there's kind of a two-step process. The first step is, depending on the water quality and in the area, you may be prohibited from applying fall nitrogen. And so, you know, I think most farmers can figure out what that means to their operation. You know, when you get a year like this where we're kind of late and time is going to be tight, I don't think guys, when they get the chance to get in the field, want to be going out and putting on anhydrous. They want to be planting. And so if you look at how that could affect your yields because of a delay in planting, or if you're now going to hire the co-op to maybe spread urea or 32, and you look at the costs per pound of N and those forms of N versus anhydrous, you know, you're talking significant dollars and significant risks to your operation. And that's just at step one, where they prohibit fall nitrogen. You know, step two is that they actually start cutting the amount of nitrogen you can put on in total on that field. And, you know, that has obvious impacts on yield. And probably the worst part about that is that they want to monitor that every 3 years. So every 3 years, they're going to check water quality, and if it's not improved, they're going to make additional cuts to your fertility program. They're going to make additional recommendations, they're not recommendations, they're obligations, as to what kind of farming practice you do or how much nitrogen you put down. And in a conference call we had with the Department of Ag, they referenced lag time. Lag time is the amount of time it takes for surface-applied nitrogen to reach the aquifer. And by their own admission, this is sometimes in excess of 10 years, up to as much as 100 years, depending on the soil type, the amount of nitrogen, and the amount of rainfall, and et cetera, et cetera. So how they come up with monitoring water quality every 3 years when they knowingly admit that it takes 10, 30-plus years for the nitrogen you put on your field to reach the aquifer, you're essentially getting regulated on farming practices of the past. And in addition to that, they don't account for any other sources of nitrogen, natural mineralization, natural background, and they don't account for any possible faulty well designs or well constructions, which can allow nitrates to seep in, and it's not actually the aquifer that's contaminated.
Mike, you talked about this being an obligation, not a recommendation. How frustrating is that for you as a farmer when you look at how other states are handling these type of nutrient management issues on a voluntary basis, and it seems like Minnesota is going in a completely different direction?
Yeah, you know, it's the heavy hand of government, and again, if when you actually look at what the rule does, it is so blatantly obvious that this has absolutely nothing to do with water quality and everything to do with just regulating farmers. For instance, they have exempted geographically almost one-third of the state. So apparently clean drinking water is not important to that third of the state. They have exempted manure application. So apparently only anhydrous form of nitrogen leaches into aquifers. I mean, the last time I checked on the periodic table, nitrogen's nitrogen. So if I live in an affected area, I can't put anhydrous or urea down, but I can put as much manure as I want. So apparently, you know, drinking water doesn't matter to those people. And then it doesn't limit, you know, yet the total amount of nitrogen I can put down in the springs and summer. So apparently, you know, the rainfall and the soil type, you know, apparently that only leaches in the winter when the ground's frozen, because that's the only reason you would stop fall nitrogen. And I can't imagine nitrogen leaching through frozen soil. So you're really talking about, you know, the spring snowmelt, which, you know, I don't know how much snow we get. 4 feet a year in southeast Minnesota, what would you say?
That sounds about right.
So if you consider that, you know, snow is anywhere from, you know, 6 to 12 to 1 in terms of precipitation, 4 feet of snow is, you know, 4 to 6 inches of rain. And some of it runs off the surface, some of it evaporates. So if water moving through the soil is your ultimate source of leaching, I would say that this rule is trying to, you know, mitigate the equivalent of about a 3-inch rain with spring snowmelt on nitrogen moving through the soil, but ignores the 28 inches of rain that we get in the growing season, ignores how much you put on in the spring, ignores how much you put on in the summer, ignores other forms of N in the fall, ignores a part of the state. Does that sound like a rule that's actually designed to improve drinking water?
Well, and Mike, the proposed rule will be published in the State Register April 30th, and there will be an 80-day public comment period. And as I listen to your concerns, I'm curious as to how the association is going to approach that comment period and how specifically you're going to lay out these concerns in a way that I'm sure you're hoping MDA will receive them and perhaps make more revisions to this rule.
Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be the case. I mean, for sure, as an organization, we're going to do everything we can to fight this rule, and we've been making our case for the past year as we've gone through different forms of the rule and different releases and different publications and different comment periods. And it appears to be falling on deaf ears. And then part of the reason that they're probably going to be unwilling to change it much, you know, I think the comment period is a formality, is they're up against the deadline. Governor Dayton is not rerunning. He leaves office at the end of January, and they're on a strict timeline to be able to get this rule approved, drafted, go through all the necessary steps, and get it on his desk for signature prior to him leaving office in January. So there's really not going to be time after this 80-day comment period for them to write a new rule, have another comment period, or anything of the such. So they're largely going through formalities here. I do think this is the rule that will get drafted if it passes. And that's, you know, that's unfortunate.
You're a young guy with a long career ahead of you farming, Mike. And as you think about a rule like this, if implemented, do you look at it as just kind of another regulation, something that, yeah, you'll have to deal with it, but at the end of the day, it's not going to really impact you that much? Or do you look at this rule as something that decades from now, it's still going to really be a problem as you work to remain profitable?
I think this rule is fundamentally game-changing to agriculture in Minnesota, because it's setting up a number of things that we've called the MDA on this, and they say, oh, no, we would never do that. But they are changing the definition of nitrogen in this rule. And that's sort of the sleeper thing that no one's paying attention to, because they're changing the definition of nitrogen to something along the lines, I don't have it right in front of me, but something along the lines of any nitrogen-containing substance applied to a field used to promote plant growth. Well, technically, Now, again, they what the government says they will and won't do versus what they're legally allowed to do are two very different things. So technically, that language change, according to our attorneys, would allow them to regulate MAP, DAP, because it has monoamine or diamine phosphate, that's nitrogen. It would allow them to regulate manure, would allow them to regulate irrigation water. Water has nitrogen in it. It basically allows them to regulate every single thing that goes on your farm. And, you know, that's how these things progress. They sneak some language change in, or they make a small change now that people say, we can live with that, and it's not the end of the world. And it's setting up, you know, the next governor or the next administration that wants to take a run at agriculture with all the tools they need to just further compound the regulations.
Well, and that ties in with my next question. I think about the waters of the U.S. rule that the Obama administration tried to get through, and when President Trump came into office, he was able to basically throw that rule out. And so at the state level, with Governor Dayton's term coming to an end at the beginning of next year, how optimistic are you that this rule might not be in effect for very long, depending on who the next governor and the next moving into future legislative sessions, things like that?
Well, you know, that one should stay optimistic that that's an avenue. But I think, you know, things are always, once passed, are always harder to undo. You know, you look at Obamacare, or, you know, waters of the U.S. Yeah, that there has been some walking back of that. But, you know, once implemented, you know, boy, to undo that is a lot of work. And, you know, they couldn't get Obamacare undone. We've been trying to work on buffers, but, you know, they're in place now. The thought of getting buffers undone in the state of Minnesota seems really challenging right now. And I'm afraid that, you know, once this is in place and is precedent, it's going to be hard for a governor to come in and, because he'll be painted as the governor that doesn't care about clean water. I mean, they'll win the PR campaign, and that's why they, you know, this used to be called, when they first proposed the rule, it was the nitrogen fertilizer rule. And they got so much pushback, and they got so much heat, and they weren't winning the PR campaign. They changed it to the drinking water, clean drinking water protection rule, because it sounds better to the public, because who doesn't want clean drinking water? And so now, you know, they can paint farmers as, you know, the group that doesn't care about water, and any governor that would try to undo this would be painted in similar fashion. And so it's, you know, yeah, hopefully, you know, a Republican governor, or maybe an ag-friendly governor, you know, a Walz, would understand the problems with this and try and address drinking water in a much more scientific-based approach on a case-by-case need rather than with a broad brush. But, yeah, I've lost a little bit of faith in the administrations and the Department of Ag in Minnesota, so it's hard to say.
Mike, if you've got just a couple extra minutes, I would like to ask you about spring field work. Do you have the time?
Sure.
So a week ago, southeastern Minnesota is blanketed in snow, and much of that snow is now melted away. How far away from planting do you think you are?
Well, we've been in the field with side-by-sides the last couple days picking rock, and, you know, it's improving and changing fast, but it's still got a little ways to go. I think probably for us personally, the question will be, you know, we've got some rain in the forecast next Tuesday. And I think depending on those rainfall amounts, the question will be, which side of that rainfall do we want to be on with planting? You know, do we want to sneak something in the ground the last day of April, first day of May, to make sure everything is actually field ready, so that if we got an extended rain delay, we can get any more hiccups out of the system? Or do we want that rain to try and, you know, maybe take out the last little pockets of frost and maybe make the fields more uniform, and then, you know, get in there May 5th, May 6th, somewhere in that time frame? So it's kind of depends on, you know, how big a rainfall that's going to be and what a day it exactly comes on. But I think for us, we're on either side of that rainfall. We shot some soil temps with a heat gun yesterday, and on the surface, we were 63 degrees, and 4 inches down, we were 58. And so, you know, not quite dry enough to put tractors out there and do tillage, but that's encouraging to see soil temps, even 4 inches down, picking up that much heat already.
Still some areas of frost, though, you said, that need to come out.
Yeah, you know, the fields are pretty good shape, you know, by the end of the day. But then when you go back out there the next morning, they're kind of wet and tacky again. So, you know, to me, that indicates that there's probably still some frost that's sort of melting down there, and it's, you know, the top gets dried out with the sun and the wind, but it sort of absorbs that melting frost overnight. And so you got some hilltops or some areas that, you know, are really dry and stay dry, but then you got other areas that sort of pick up moisture overnight. And I assume that's sort of unevenness of melting. And you've got, you know, if you had standing water or a lot of snow melt, I think it took the frost out a little quicker, but where you had some bare soil, you know, I think the frost went a little deeper this winter, and it's maybe hasn't had the rainfall or the moisture to get it out of there. So I think there's, yeah, probably a little unevenness underneath there if you could check.